Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Veteran North Carolina State Representative Susan Fischer of Buncombe County has seen a lot of controversial legislation during her 14-plus years in the State House, from the enactment of the state lottery to the infamous bathroom bill HB2. None of those matters, however, ever threatened to upset the apple cart of state like the constitutional amendments that are scheduled to be voted on this November. I talked by phone with Representative Fischer from her Asheville office earlier this week about the amendments and why she is so concerned. Well, Representative Susan Fischer, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being back with us.
Thank you for having me.
One of the things you've been commuting to Raleigh for in recent weeks, something we probably wished hadn't happened, was a special session. We've had a lot of special sessions in recent years. You had a little special session recently as a follow-up to this whole issue of the constitutional amendments that are going
That's
on the ballot.
Right.
We've got this dispute over labeling of judicial candidates. What's your take on how this has been going lately?
Well, it has been a pretty obviously self-serving attempt at consolidating all of the power within just one part of the legislature, that being the House and Senate Republican portion of the legislature. I think that it is really just more of what we've seen all session long, really all biennium long, where the rules of the game change midway. Somebody compared it to if you are watching a basketball game and somebody is scoring a little too high with those three-point shots, then after the half, you just take those three-point shots away and see what happens. I think that is what we've been seeing throughout the last, several years.
What we're talking about, of course, is the fact that the legislature came back to town recently to change the rules as to how the constitutional amendments that are, at least at this point, scheduled to appear on the November ballot will be labeled. There was a bipartisan commission that had been established to do that, a longstanding bipartisan commission, the Constitutional Amendments Publication Commission. When it became apparent, however, to the lawmakers that that commission might actually engage in some truth in labeling, they decided, I think we'll label them ourselves. And so that was one of the things that happened in this special session. So we're in this amazing situation right now where we're going, at least unless the courts intervene, to have six constitutional amendments on the ballot this November. Arguably, none of them is actually labeled in such a way that voters will really know what the heck it is they're voting on.
That's true. And I think that one of the interesting pieces of this is that we saw the legislature sort of change the rules on this, and they changed it just because they thought that what they would see in terms of explanation of these amendments would be partisan. This commission has been going for 30-plus years. The other interesting thing about all of this process is that historically, enabling legislation to go along with these amendments has already been established before you vote on them.
I think what they're going to do.
That's exactly right. In this particular case, we won't be coming back to work on enabling legislation until November 27th, when they have what is sort of being called a lame duck session after the November election. And so, first of all, they are betting on all of the amendments passing. And then second of all, we're not even going to get to hear what the explanation of how these will be actually implemented until after the enabling legislation is passed after the election. It's a very funny, very confusing way of going about the public's work.
We probably don't have time to get into the details of all of them. The one thing I wanted to hit on that just continues to strike me as just sort of a remarkable aspect of at least a couple of these amendments. If two of these amendments would shift a great deal of power, the appointment power for judicial vacancies, and literally the appointment power for hundreds of individual commission and board members from the governor to the legislature, this is a huge shift in power in North Carolina, and neither of the amendments really in their short titles, we call them, even really indicates that it does this. And one of the amendments, quite arguably, could invalidate the right of the governor to veto bills, because it says the governor can't veto a bill that includes a judicial appointment. So if they slap a judicial appointment on, say, the budget, well, then arguably the governor no longer has even the right to veto. I mean, this is
right. Very misleading, very sort of deceptive. And I would guess that the citizens who go to the polls in November are aware enough that they're not going to have this kind of wool being pulled over their eyes this year. I mean, if you look back, I think it was very interesting to read Jerry Cohen's take on a lot of this historically. People pay attention. They aren't going to just vote on an amendment if they, first of all, if they don't understand it, and second of all, if it's something that is obviously does not belong in a constitution.
You know, there has been sort of a spontaneous movement. I would call it a genuine spontaneous grassroots movement that has kind of arisen, where they're just arguing nix all six is sort of the Twitter hashtag.
That's
Let's
true.
Just say no to
yeah.
all of them. What do you think about that? Obviously, some of the amendments are less controversial than the others, but they're all sort of unclear as to what they would actually do. Is that something you think is likely to be embraced?
I think it's very possible, but I think that with the kinds of explanation that we're hearing from grassroots organizations, like, for instance, I just heard of a volunteer who works with the AARP.
Right.
Yesterday, we were talking, and she said that she was going to be helping them with that sort of a campaign to explain these amendments and then to sort of help people come to a decision on whether or not they should support them. I believe that the main thing that probably grassroots organizations stick to is that we don't even know what they're going to do until after the fact.
Right.
If enabling legislation is not passed until November 27th, after the election, then how can people really knowledgeably vote on an amendment that's on a ballot?
One thing that was also remarkable about the process of these amendments arising was the lack of process that took place in the General Assembly itself. You know, we heard recently from Jerry Cohen, this person you've referenced, who's a longtime legislative counsel at the General Assembly, that traditionally in some of the more important constitutional amendments, the revision of the Constitution that took place in mid-century, there were months of testimony, experts, panels, hearings around the state,
yeah.
academics. All six of these amendments just sort of came out of, well, and we'd heard rumors about them, but they all really literally were blown through the General Assembly in just a few days, right?
That's correct. This is so emblematic of how the Republicans have led over the last 8 years or so, getting close to a decade here. And none of us, even their fellow colleagues in the legislature, don't know what's coming until we see it on a piece of paper or on a computer screen in the chamber. No meetings, no open meetings, no public meetings, no hearings, no testimony, no nothing. And that has been something that has just totally frustrated the process as far as I'm concerned and as far as my constituents are concerned. They have things to say, they have opinions, they have experience, they have expertise, but none of that is being called upon when making these really important decisions about the Constitution of our state.
The other amendment that I wanted to at least highlight in our limited time is the one that would place a permanent income tax cap that would lower the,
yes.
the overall cap on the state income tax and thereby
right.
hamstring future legislatures from funding essential structures like public schools, public transportation, the environment. Any thoughts on that one?
Right out of the box, their language is deceptive. They're trying to make people think, the voters think, that they're actually lowering the tax rate. That is not true, because the tax rate is already lower than what they're proposing that it would be on the constitutional amendment. I think that this process is a whole sort of episode of getting the cart before the horse and being so bent on having things go a particular way that then you eventually have to fall back and make corrections. That's why we've had all the special sessions. That's why we've had all the stops and starts. And I believe that once you start trying to go about lawmaking and policymaking in a deceptive way, you end up having to backtrack. And I think that's what we're seeing happen of late.
The final question I'll ask you is about what might be sort of at the root of all this is the sort of gerrymandering that we've seen in North Carolina politics for a long time. We had some hope there for a while that the U.S. Supreme Court might actually step in and declare it as unconstitutional. That now seems perhaps to have gone back on the back burner. Is there any cause for optimism in the battle to end gerrymandering and maybe move towards a system in which we have fair electoral districts in our state?
Back a few biennia ago, we voted in a bipartisan way to create a nonpartisan commission to draw the districts. And I have hope that that will come back. The problem with last time is that the Senate, for whatever reason, did not take up the legislation. I am not giving up on the idea that we could be successful in making that bipartisan effort come true. You know, in Wisconsin is where the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to rule on this, and they sent it back. That was one of the Supreme Court cases. And some of the leadership on the other side of the aisle is saying, we're going to try this again. We're going to try to pass a bill that calls for a nonpartisan redistricting commission. I think that you're going to see more and more of that, hopefully, across the country. We know that it works. And I have a lot of hope that North Carolina will be among those who decide, you know, enough is enough. We need to let voters choose their legislators and not legislators choosing their voters. Let the constituents choose. Let the citizens choose who their legislators should be.
Well, amen to that. Thank you for all the work you're doing on that cause and so many others. We wish you all the best and hope perhaps you'll get a break from traveling down to Raleigh for a while. And thank you again. We'll do this again real soon. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you so much.
Up next, one of the state's leading constitutional experts explains why the current slate of proposals is so unusual. Stay with us.